Throughout the week, we will go through, in bracket form, the greatest Yankee victories in the last 25 years, the worst Yankee losses in the last 25 years, the greatest Met victories of the last 25 years, and the worst Met losses of the last 25 years. It has been quite a journey putting together 64 baseball games. Actually, technically, it's less than 64 because there are some crossovers between the Mets and the Yankees. But we did the last 25 years so that most people listening can remember all of these games we are about to discuss. You can go right now at Evan Roberts, WFAN. There's a pretty little bracket. Tommy Izzo put it together. It's got Shea Stadium in the background, and you can play along. But to do this, I wanted to bring in some fellow fans to discuss these games. And we'll be doing that throughout the week. John Jastrzemski will join me later in the week, and diehard Yankee fan Ernie Acosta. So today I want to introduce a guy that you hear on this radio station. He is a big-time Met fan. And his name is Sal Licata. Sal, and he beat me in horse. Sal, how are you?
Yeah, right, exactly. I'm good. I mean, it's actually fun to think about the Mets having this many good wins in the last 25 years, because initially when we were talking about it, I was like, can you find that many enough to do a bracket? But there are some, and it's been fun going back over it, reliving some of the memories, so I'm looking forward to that.
This is the last time I'm going to do a shot at the Mets, but I will say this. Putting together a Yankee bracket and a Met bracket is very, very different. I mean, I'll give you an example. I'll give you a great example. There is a World Series walk-off home run via the New York Yankees back in 1999. You remember Chad Curtis hit it. That game, a World Series walk-off home run, did not make the field of 16 for the New York Yankees. If the right. Mets had a World Series walk-off homer, it'd be the number one seed by a mile and a half for the last 25 years.
So, it's sad when you put the two together.
Yes. And the other thing is, every good victory will end with something bad, if you think about it. I mean, think about it. Every great victory that we're going to discuss today will probably be followed up at some point by some brutal loss. That's the another difference between the Mets and the Yankees. Tommy Lugauer does a fine job producing. He's a diehard Met fan. Are you ready to go down memory lane, Luke?
Well, it's funny, Evan. You stole my thunder there. I was going to say it's fitting that we're doing the wins first because they correlate and lead right to the loser bracket. Most of these wins, you could just follow right along to the loser bracket because it's most likely the next day or the next series.
It is a very
fair point. Know which one made me more aggravated, going over the wins or the losses.
It's true. No, because you're right. The wins lead to a loss. Now, there were a few that didn't make the field that were very tough to leave out. Mm. Is there anything, Sal, that jumped out at you where you said this game needed to be there and it's not?
No, because you and I, you know, through text, we were discussing it. The one that initially was left out was the 97 first ever Subway Series game. I thought that had to be on there. I mean, you're talking about, you know, early days of the the first Subway Series game ever between the Mets and the Yankees. That has to be on there as far as I was concerned. But I don't think look, it's tough to do, as you mentioned, and I like the way you paired most of it. So I don't really have one that is not there that I feel like you left out.
The one that ended up missed the cut completely, that was there, then I took it out, and I was back and forth about, is the Wilmer Flores game from just a couple of years ago. Because that game, in so many ways, signifies the change of the 2015 Mets. You know, they make the trade of Yoenis Cespedes earlier in the day. It's one of those days I remember everything about what I did that day. You know, Joe and I are doing a July 31st trade deadline show from Giant Camp. It was very interesting timing. They trade for Cespedes. I can't go to the game that night because I'm already in New Jersey. I get home, and I remember just being so emotionally drained from the last couple of days because they had the brutal, brutal loss the day before in the rain to the San Diego Padres. The Flores trade is supposed to happen. It doesn't happen. It was like a whirlwind of 3 days. And so that was a tough one because I kind of look at that game as a regular season game that changed everything about 2015.
I don't know if it's just because it's more recent for me. My diehard fandom days were more so 99, 2000. So I'm going to – that's why it's all subjective. I mean, and maybe games that we were at, games that you remember watching. I mean, some of the games I couldn't go to or I wasn't watching the whole thing because I was at work, whatever it may be. That game, obviously, I remember the day, and it was a huge game. But because it was recent, I mean, it's Wilmer Flores, who I never loved.
I was getting on Evan for it even being on the bracket.
What?
Yeah. Yeah, well, that,
Because at first you didn't have Malicki, and then you didn't have this specific game. I won't say what it was. That wasn't on there either. I'm like, you can't have this Wilmer Flores game on there and not have either one of those games on here.
Am I biased towards that game or something? Because you guys both are, you know, wanting all over it right now.
I think it was a big game. Lugie, you could obviously comment what you thought of it. For me, it's just because it's more recent, so I would favor the old stuff.
Yeah, I like Flo, and I think it was a great moment, obviously, a couple days before he's crying, the whole thing. But in a lot of ways, it was just about the Mets' ineptitude, and in some ways, like screwing up the trade and making it like this public disaster anyway. And then he has the nice moment. He had a lot of nice walk-off moments. But I just don't look at that win as them as propelling them on to the World Series here. I think it's where Danley Murphy got hot and Cespedes came here.
And how about the end of the year against the Washington Nationals in Washington, you know, just obliterating the Nationals, mm-hmm. Cespedes and everybody going. Those games to me were, I know, I get why the Flores one was important, but those games to me just as important during that run.
All right. Hey, this proves I'm not a dictator, because if it was just up to me, I think I would have found a way for that game to get there. Maybe I overrate it, or maybe you two guys are completely out of step. I don't know.
Well, a few games I thought of too. The game 162-07, the main, the 14 strikeout game.
Yeah.
How about the win last year, the seventh straight win, the Conforto walk-off, the Frazier home run?
Yes,
that was one
I
of the best games they've had in years.
I know.
How about the David Wright walk-off against Mo?
Yeah. There were a few. The game against the Nationals last year was one that was very difficult to take off, but I think what popped into my brain was that the season ended up going nowhere. You know,
there were a lot of these.
not necessarily, man, because we have a handful of regular season games on this list, and we'll start to go through who's there, and then we'll obviously do the matchups. But the regular season games either are so enormous, like the Johan no-hitter, or it was in a season like 2000, the 10-run ending against the Braves, that led somewhere. And they won the pennant that year. The Mets didn't even make the playoffs.
You can't just have a regular... You can't just have a regular season win in a year where they don't make the playoffs, especially if it's not a Subway. You know, regular season Subway Series game in 97, a little different than a regular season win in 2018 or 19,
but
they don't go to the postseason.
That's what I'm saying about last year's game against the Nationals. Think about it. It was an amazing game. It went nowhere.
Yeah, but it got them back in the mix. Now, they blew that later, and we'll get to one of those games at some point here over the next couple of days, but that got them back in the mix. They were left for loss there, and that winning streak got them there, and the place was electric. It actually felt like baseball again back at Citi Field for the first time in years.
The honorable mention, because this was almost in the field of 16 and just missed, mm-hmm. we're starting with those, was game one against the Diamondbacks in 1999, the mm-hmm. National League Divisional Series, because for a lot of us, if you were not around in 86 and 88, this was your maiden voyage into the postseason. This was your first experience seeing a Met postseason game. And it started.
And it's funny because you have. Sorry, Evan.
No, go ahead.
Because you have the lead up. You have the lead up to it, right? There's so many games from '99, the final game of the regular season, the playoff game, and then that's where there's a build up to it. But that game, for me, I remember vividly watching it. A late night game in Arizona. You're watching Randy Johnson go out there. You know, Olrud and Alfonso off of Bobby Schwenor. That's feeling the intensity. You know, something Yankee fans feel all the time. At that point in '99, it was the first time that I felt it in my prime fandom. So that was a huge game. But you can't put every game from 1999.
No, I know. I love the fact that as we do this, we're just going to make fun of ourselves in comparison to the Yankees, which is, you know, kind of being a Mets fan.
Again, it's apples and oranges, and I've talked about this before. At guys our age, there was door number one was the Yankees, and door number two is the Mets. And as you go through this week, you'll realize which door was the right door to pick and which wasn't the right one.
No, that's a very true statement, that's for sure. The other ones I thought about, all right, the other honorable mentions, was the World Series victories. And what I mean by that is Game 3 against the Yankees and Game 3 against Kansas City. But I don't know how you guys felt when they won those games. Very similar, right? I mean, think about that. The two World Series I had someone correct my grammar mm-hmm. a couple of days ago. The two World Series that we experienced as the generation's Met fans all played out the same way. A brutal game one loss, lose Game 2, and then, yay, here's your moment, Game 3 at Chase Stadium and Citi Field. But I don't know how you guys felt. Start with you, Sal. When they won those games, Game 3 in 2000, Game 3 in 2015, it was more a relief than anything else. It wasn't a celebration
exactly.
that they won a World Series game.
it was more, especially in 2000, it was more about avoiding embarrassment because you felt like they were going to get swept in 2000, so they finally get that win. Then maybe you're hoping they could get back into the series. In 2015, I think it was less about embarrassment and more, I was more hopeful that after they won game three that they still could beat the Royals. Obviously, it didn't work out like that. But yeah, it wasn't like this euphoric, great, oh, here we go. They were down 0-2. Realistically, they're most likely not coming back and winning these series, especially against the Yankees.
And I'll talk about it a little bit more. I'll expound on pound it on tomorrow. But I never thought the Mets at any point in that series were going to beat the Royals. I just thought it was the Royals' year. Nobody was stopping them. They matched up very well against the Mets, and it was just this like sort of long drawn out defeat. The Yankees, I just wanted to leave the country. I just did not want to be here. I have never watched any games where I was like, I do not want to be here watching this. Why do I have to? Is this just not enough to be a Mets fan that I have to go through this as well? So that's sort of where I was at mentally at like, 13, 14 years old.
Now, I almost made a decision that would have been very, very controversial with this bracket. And I'm trying to remember who really talked me out of it and convinced me you got to put this in the field of 16. And that was the Mike Piazza 9-11 game. And I want to explain my thinking. And
that was me. I was the one telling you.
You were the one who taught me the errors of my ways?
I told you it has to be there.
No, ultimately, the more I thought about it, you were right. My reasoning at the time was, it's so different than baseball. But it kind of came back, and I think this is what convinced me, Luke, along with you, is it reminded me of where we are as a country, that sports is a distraction, that Mike's home run against the Braves wasn't going to, take everything away and the pain that we all felt after September 11th, but it was a reminder, hey, this is baseball, and this is why it's great. It can distract you from the real world. But it didn't have anything to do with winning. It had to do with that, which in a way is more important. In many ways, it's 10 times more important. So I guess at first thought about keeping it separate only because it's so different than these other games. But when you write the history of the Mets and you write the history of big home runs in New York, it's there. And so you're right. It had to be there, and it is there, and it's got a good seed, and who knows? It may be the winner of this whole thing, for all I know.
Right, but then the problem for me, because I tend to agree with you on it, I've always kept that game and even that home run separate because it's bigger than the result of the actual game. But it's different than the result of the actual game. So if you're saying it's more important and it's bigger, which we understand, there's certain things that are bigger than sports, and that was one of the moments that transcended just the victory over the Braves, then how does that game get beat? So that's why, for me, I would have kind of had it separately. And the same way I look at that home run, which was obviously a great moment, for me, I think Piazza's biggest home run as far as results of a game, results of a series or season, was the Game 6 home run in the NLCS. So it's not knocking that game or that moment. It's putting it in its own category. That's how special it is. So it's tough to put that up against, in this particular case, the 97 for a Subway Series game.
It's going to be difficult no matter what with that game because of what you said. It's so different. But it's a big part of history, and it's a big part of the last 25 years. I mean, it is, when the sports world shut down and networks started saying we got to start airing classic games, whether it's SNY or ESPN or FS1, whoever it is, that was one of the first games that was going to be replayed. Because it is what it is. It's classic, and I think it's one of those games we all remember. So, look, it's up to you, it's up to Luke, it's up to me on where we want to put it when it's matched up against another game. Maybe you're going to say, look, as much as that game means to me, I think about, winning a Subway Series game, or I think about winning a playoff game is different, and so for this reason, greater in a way, because it's a different kind of great. So it's really up to interpretation, but it's not easy. Listen, man, I learned this in the Bodingo Bracket of Pain. It is not easy putting together a bracket. It really isn't. I kind of look at this as the Bodingo Bracket of Pain, except today is pleasure. Today is the Bodingo Bracket of Pleasure. Bodingo, and somewhat. It's for us, for a younger generation of Yankee fans and a younger generation of Met fans, and really all generations of Met fans, because you remember all these games, even if you also remember 1986 and 1969. You remember all of it. And when we get back, we'll go right into it. We'll go matchup by matchup. We'll listen to some of these calls, and we'll see what we come up with. It is Bodingo and Roberts. Joe is off. We'll come right back here on The Fan. Bodingo and Roberts here in the afternoon. Joe is on vacation. I'm pleased to be joined by Sal Licata, who does nights and overnights sporadically throughout this radio station. He's a big Met fan. He's a big Falcon fan. We'll leave that part out.
And, yeah, really.
Tommy Lugauer doing a great job back at the shop in Manhattan. The bracket of greatest Met wins of the last 25 years is at Evan Roberts, WFAN. And our first discussion and matchup, two games from the same year, a magical year, 20 years ago of 2000. The 10-run inning against the Atlanta Braves against what I think was a game that was just a party. And that was game five of the NLCS that year against the Cardinals. It was not a competitive game at all. It was just one giant party at Shea Stadium for 3 hours as finally, you know, Timo jumps in the air on the final catch and the Mets win the National League pennant. What are your thoughts on these games, Sal?
Well, I mean, first of all, I'm assuming you were at both of these as well. I think you have a different there's got to be a different perspective if you're there, right? I mean, that's why I'm trying to weigh it being there and not being there or how important it was in the long-run victory. So there's a lot of things that go into it. But for me, I agree with you 100% on what you said. It was a party. That's different to me than a great, intense win. Now, I do remember Shea Stadium, the upper level, I was sitting there. It was rocking, literally rocking. And that was probably the first and only time that I actually remember that for clinching the pennant there in 2000. But I loved the 2010 run inning. That was, if you remember, Ev, I mean, obviously you do, the Met, they were getting pounded consistently by the Braves forever. It was fireworks night. I remember getting to a point where I was so beaten down that I told my buddy, I want to leave this game. I don't remember if it was the seventh or eighth inning, but I said, I want to leave early. This is enough. I've had enough of this. And he convinced me to stay. Thank goodness he did. And the place erupted when they came back. So I love both these games, but I would probably lean toward the eighth seed here in the 2010 inning.
Wow. Well, a couple of things, right? First of all, if it wasn't fireworks night, that moment is completely different.
Yeah, half the people would have left. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. They stopped selling beer. People would have been gone by the seventh inning. Yeah.
So that's number one. Number two, Edgardo Alfonso doesn't get enough love because
That's for sure.
Fonzie's the guy that tied the game. All Piazza did. I'm not trying to diminish Piazza, but all he did was put the exclamation. Well, he gave him the lead, but he also put the exclamation point on things.
Fonzie, he gave him the lead. Yeah.
Fonzie got the biggest
hit.
He
gave him the lead. But still, Piazza's moment, the way he was pumping his fist, and you knew it was coming. The bullet down, you knew it was
Fonzie's
coming.
Moment was bigger.
The place was going to. Oh, come on.
Yeah, it's not bigger, Ev.
Of course it is.
Come on. Guys. You hate Piazza. No, this has been building for years.
I hate
you
Piazza.
You do hate Mike Piazza.
Are
you have
nuts?
An anti-Piazza bias. This has been dating back to you and I in the newsroom for many years, going back 15, 20. You do. You're anti-Piazza.
I'm not anti-Piazza. I love the guy. I'm merely saying that Fonzie tying the game was just the bigger moment. It's just not remembered as much because, you know, Mike hits the home run. He kind of caps it off. I love his home run. I'm just saying tying the game's a bigger deal. That's all. I hate Piazza. The hell's wrong with you?
You do have an anti-Piazza thing.
No, I don't. I'm not accepting
that. Come
on. Sal, I'm arguing with a caller 20 years later about Clemens throwing a bat at him. Don't you think a part of that is the love?
More the hatred towards Clemens. let's be honest, which is a lot bigger than your love for Piazza.
That is not fair.
I heard that. Yeah, I heard that. I thought the calls on the overnight were bad. I mean, come on. We should be beyond the idea that that was a bat or they thought it was a ball. But
yeah,
anyway, no, I've always felt like you never loved Piazza
as much as
maybe it was because I cheered for him when he came back as a Padre. I wanted him to hit
the third home run that night. Are you getting on me for not doing that? I'm not cheering the guys.
No.
I cheered him his first at bat. After that, he's the enemy. What do you want me to do?
Don't you think, though, that game, because of the frustration, because of the euphoria when they did tie it and eventually the home run, don't you think that felt greater than 2000? Just for me personally being in the stands for both, it did. I'd be curious what Lugie's perspective and yours is on that one.
Yeah, Sal, I think you nailed it right on the head. I think when you start to go through some of these games, I think the games that you are at obviously take on a whole nother level. I was actually at the Piazza game. Not only at the game, I was on the third base side up the left field line. So that thing, talk about coming into your living room. And I have never been in Shea Stadium louder than that. So from an emotional perspective, can we just talk about Brian Jordan here? Chipper Jones gets so much hatred. Where is the Brian Jordan hatred? This guy hit us he just hit another three-run homer yesterday when no one's playing baseball right now. This guy was a Met destroyer. I don't want to use any wrong words here, but he got on the Mets all the time. They could never get the guy out. The NLC, the problem with beating the Cardinals is we didn't rectify, we didn't exercise the demons of the Braves. Rick Ankiel couldn't throw a strike.
Oh, my God.
Listen, I'm not saying... I'm not going the 8 seed, but I think the 8 seed here deserves a lot more love.
Okay.
As far as a party, you're right. As far as a great game, no. But listen, it's the first time in my life, well, in my life, in the time that I can remember it, that the Mets are making the World Series. So I'm going to go with the 1 seed here. But I do think that the 8 seed is very dangerous here and deserves certainly a lot of love. Maybe just because I was at it. Well, but there was something about sticking it to the Braves that mattered so much. And again, it was in a year that they made the World Series.
Listen, that game was incredible. And if you're ranking greatest regular season victories, it's going to be towards the top. I think the sheer shock that they would be able to come back against a team that they never were able to beat in Atlanta was incredible. And that place rocked. I mentioned this a few weeks ago. I guess it was just that last inning. I don't know if they were showing it on Twitter or SNY. Somebody was showing it, that inning and that comeback. But watching Piazza hit that home run actually made me a little emotional. And I was saying to my wife, I said, you know why I think I'm emotional? Because I don't know the next time we're all going to be in a building like that with random people hugging each other. Like, I don't know when that's happening again. And so it wasn't simply beating the Braves and thinking about the win. It was the electricity in that crowd. And they were great for both.
And Ev, we haven't mentioned it yet with two outs. I mean, they did the most damage, two outs against the Braves, who just abused us year after year after year.
A great comeback. But partying to win the pennant?
Come on, no, of course.
I mean, one is very tough to beat, especially, and it's so forgotten about in this game, that in the eighth inning, Dave Veers drills Jay Payton in the head.
Right.
And Jay Payton charges the mound.
Right.
In the bottom of the eighth inning of like a 7-0, whatever the final score was, 7-0, 6-0 game. That was kind of wacky. You get yourself like a mini brawl in this clincher, and it's sort of forgotten about, and it's the reason Timo was out there to make the final catch.
To make the catch, yep, exactly.
Hearing you talk about, I will say, giving me goosebumps thinking back to after the game, right, after Timo caught it and we're all walking out in masses through the hallways of Shea, knowing, and people going nuts, let's go Mets, knowing that you're going to the World Series, like you said, for the most part, for the first time in our fandom, being a young fan. I was 6 years old, whatever, 7 and 86. So that was a moment that was probably unmatched.
Loogie, I know you have it. Let's hear the final out, 2000, game five. For anyone under the age of, I'd say, 41, 42, this is your first real experience of winning a pennant.
Hampton to the windup. Now the pitch. And a drive in the air to center field. Timo Perez jumps in the air, waiting for it to come down, makes the catch, and the New York Mets are the 2000 National League champions. And they'll be going to the World Series for the first time since 1986.
Oh, by the way, who let the dogs out? There should be another reason why the 8 seed deserves consideration. Because on the radio forever, and then we get beat anyway in the World Series. So great, thanks.
Such a great point. I was thinking the same thing, too.
Oh.
I'm thinking, boy, that call's been completely ruined just because you hear who let the dogs out in the background.
Oh, man.
All right, I agree with you. Winning the pennant wins. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Sal. You've been outvoted. What can I
tell
you?
That's okay.
All right. This is a very interesting matchup because these are actually back-to-back games, all right? Same year, 2000. This is what it's like being a Met fan, Yankee fans. Every big moment is from the same, like, 3 years, essentially. In 2000, game three against the Giants, Benny Agbayani hits the walk-off home run in extra innings versus game two, the previous game against the Giants. Benitez blows a huge lead against JT Snow at that game-tying home run. Mets take the lead in the top of the next inning, and then Gianfranco, with guys on base, and the Mets about to blow it again, strikes out Barry Bonds looking. Sal, your thoughts?
I'm probably going to go game two here. For me, I value more I know they win the pennant or whatever, and it was a euphoric win, you go to the World Series, but the game and the series never was in doubt. And for me, game three, even though it was, you know, won 13 innings and Agbayani hit the big home run, I remember being there, I never felt in trouble in that series. But game two, obviously a different story, and the way that the game went, you're frustrated because they blow the lead, JT Snow bangs it off the right field wall. I can remember hearing it. And then they battle back. So I think game two, the better game, the feel of potentially losing that game and the disaster that would have been, grasping, you know, victory from the jaws of defeat, or however the saying goes, that to me weighs more. So I would lean toward game two. And then Franco, I was striking out. Maybe Johnny Franco's best inning ever.
No
with
doubt.
The Mets, striking out Barry Bonds. So
I think that's
go game two.
I think that's Franco's best moment as a Met. I don't know if he would necessarily agree with that, but I think striking out Bonds with the tying and winning runs on base, I mean, how the heck do you beat that, Loogie?
Yeah, I think it was extra special because we were able to get Bonds out there with Franco. And there's a game they had to have. Obviously, Levon beat him in game one. You can't go down 0-2 there. But I got to give some love here to Benny because I think that home run often gets forgotten. Not that the Mets have like a million moments, but when you start thinking about Ventura and the Piazza moments and the Pratt home run, I think the Benny home run gets a little lost. I think, unfortunately, it gets kind of sandwiched between the Franco game and then the Bobby Jones game. So a lot of people almost forget it. But it's a great moment. Benny was a fun Met. You know, not a great Met, but I like Benny a lot. So I'm still going to lean the Franco game here, but I want to give Benny his due because I feel like that home run does get sort of lost in the shuffle.
Look, I think, Sal, I think you hit it right on the head. These are two great games. These are they're playoff games. So no matter what situation you're in, even when you're up 3-0, you know, there's always that nervousness of one loss could lead to the series changing. So every game is going to involve stress. But if they lost game two, they were done. I mean, the way Armando Benitez choked, and that's what he did when he gave up that home run to Snow, which you're right, the clank sound off the foul pole. That's that sound right down the line. That was haunting, and that would have been, they weren't going to recover from that. There's no question. And I think with Franco on the mound and Bonds up and guys on base and knowing they're about to potentially go down 0-2 and they could blow it again, that was a high wire act as I've ever seen one. So I'm with you. I think it's game two. In fact, let's hear that last call. John Franco versus should-be Hall of Famer Barry Bonds, game two NLDS 2000.
Allowed, but a confrontation about to ensue with Barry Bonds standing in against John Franco. Bonds waiting, choking up on the bat from the left side. Miller set to run. 3-2 pitch. On the inside corner, strike three called. The ball game is over. Franco strikes out Barry Bonds with a 3-2 off-speed pitch, and the Mets have won the ball game. And they're all out to congratulate John Franco. The Mets have tied up the series with a 10-inning victory here at Pac Bell Park. And they'll go back to Shea Stadium, tied with the Giants at a game apiece. And Bob, what a tremendous victory for the New York Mets.
What a marvelous thing for John Franco. John Franco has been so unselfish all year long, working behind Armando Benitez. Coming up, and it comes down to a duel with Barry Bonds. They have dueled each other so many times over the years, and Franco wins the war.
Oh, isn't it great to hear Murph's voice? It's great to hear Murph chiming in on that. Ah, brings you back to your childhood. That was incredible. That was an incredible game. This one, I'm very intrigued on what you guys are going to say. The Grand Slam single, Game 5, Atlanta Braves, 1999, against the Todd Pratt series-winning walk-off home run against the Arizona Diamondbacks, Game 4, 1999. Sal?
I feel very, very, very strongly about this one.
Oh, jeez.
For me, it's a six seed. It's Todd Pratt's home run. Again, with the Grand Slam single, I think that may be, with all due respect, the most overrated moment in the history of the franchise. Remember, they were down. I don't care if it was a close series, and I love that 99 team more so than the 2000 team. They were down 0-3. They were not coming back. And even at that point, even though they won game four, they were down 3-1 in this game. So for me, and I love game six, but at that point, the series was already lost. So I don't look at the Grand Slam single as one of these great moments in the history of the franchise. Todd Pratt's home run, however, being at the game, feeling the game after the Mets blew a lead in the eighth inning. They come back and tie the game against, was it against Manti?
I think it was against Mad Manti.
Whatever. They tie the game in the eighth, and then to do what Todd Pratt, of all people, and Ev, I think the key words are what you said. Not a game winning, a series winning.
Right.
Advancing for the first time. That, to me, I love that Todd Pratt home run. I look back at that much more fondly than the Grand Slam single, so I'd vote number six here.
I just knew that. I don't know why. I kind of knew you were going to do that. By the way, they tied it against Greg Swindell in the bottom of the eighth
inning.
on a Roger Cedeno sacrifice fly. But then Matt Manti eventually came into the game, who was the Diamondback closer at the time, and he was coming out for like his third inning of work, and that's when Pratt hit the home run, in which Steve Finley really blew it, because if he timed his
not
jump...
Not a great vertical. Yeah, he didn't time the jump at all.
I think he makes the catch. I think he actually catches it. That's why there was such confusion on that play, where Pratt stopped himself at second base because he wasn't sure. I'm very mixed about this. I'm actually going to say the Grand Slam single, and I'll tell you why. All right? I'm going to tell you why, Sal. Okay? Because I understand your point. It's a tremendous point. It's a great point. They were going to face Randy Johnson in Game 5.
Yes!
That was before Randy Johnson had become the Randy Johnson that pitched in 2001 against Texas. They beat him in Game 1. He wasn't that good in the playoffs.
Randy Johnson.
I understand that. But it wasn't like you were facing this guy. It was like facing Clayton Kershaw right now in the playoffs. Right. It's still Clayton Kershaw.
Okay,
you're not fearful of him. Are you like a Bumgarner or guys like that?
Look, I'm not comparing it to Mike Scott in 1986. I'm merely saying...
I just wanted to throw that out there.
And you know what? It's going to be tough to beat Randy Johnson again. They beat him the first time. Are they going to go out and do it again, especially on the road? So I get all of that. But I envisioned something that I was afraid of. Now, I ended up seeing it a bunch of times. But at this moment, what scared me about 99 is seeing somebody else celebrate on the field at Shea Stadium. Now, yes, it's hilarious for me to say that out loud, considering the Yankees would do it a year later. The Royals would do it. The Giants would do it. I trust me. I get all of it, but it's scary.
The Cardinals.
I left that out on purpose. So there's been
that
a
was
lot.
Probably second to the Yankees.
Yes. There's a lot of celebrating going on at Shea Stadium and Citi Field. But in that moment, that's what I feel. I didn't want to see Chipper Jones. I know he's a nice guy now. He's on with Moose and Maggie. Chuckle it up. Great. I didn't want to see Chipper Jones celebrating on my field, especially when earlier, like a month earlier, he's like, "Hey, you can tell all those Met fans to put their Yankee shirts on." Remember that garbage he pulled?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I still remember.
No, he wasn't ever lost for words after games, that's for sure.
So I didn't want to see that. And so even though they lost the series, they end up pushing it in Game 6. They come back after Al Leiter can't get an out. Piazza, it's that great home run, Sal, that you mentioned earlier. So even though they lost the series... I don't know. Avoiding just losing at home to the Braves, a majestic game. Remember, they were down by a run that inning. Mm-hmm. Todd Pratt drew a walk to tie the game up against Kevin McGlinchey, and then Ventura hits the home run, the single, whatever the heck you want to call it. I disagree. Ventura Grand Slam single. Loogie, the pressure's on. You got to break this tie.
Wow.
It's so tough. And I have a personal story about the Grand Slam single, too. The Pratt home run was the first time where I saw a baseball game from the Mets, and I went, you know what? This is what it feels like. I know they had a couple. We obviously had the wild card game, 162. But I was like, wow, this is what it feels like. This is nice to see. This is exciting. The story with the Grand Slam single, I was actually at a wedding. Okay, so now if you remember, that game started at 4 o'clock, right? And it went to, like, November. I mean, the game never ended. It was, like, an 8-hour game.
Yeah, so it was a very long game.
And I was 14 at the time. Now, you know, 34-year-old Tommy would just sneak out and I'd take the punishment. But back then, it was like you kind of had to toe the line a little bit with your parents. I was sneaking back, forth with some of my uncles, my grandfather. We were trying to watch this game in and out. And it's tough with baseball. You can't just be like, well, it's over in 5 minutes. It's extra innings. It could end in 4 weeks. So it was tough. We had actually, a few of us, missed like this big picture we took, kind of like Godfather style. Joe, appreciate that. After we missed that picture, I was not allowed to go back there. So I did not see the Grand Slam single, one of the great moments. Now, like Sal said, it led to a disastrous loss, maybe even overrated in some ways. I did not see that live. I've obviously gone back and watched the game. So for me, as a Met fan at that age, to not see that moment was like unbelievable. So
what does it mean? What does it all mean, Lou?
It's a tough one because that loss led to Game 6. It's so tough because would you have rather just lost that game? Because the aggravation that came after was probably going to be worse than losing that game. And then, like you said, from years to come.
Well, how about this way? What is the more meaningful win in the history of the franchise?
It's Pratt.
Oh, there you go. It's Pratt. I mean, I'm with you. I agree.
I mean, from that, if you phrase it like that, it's Pratt. But as far as a moment, an iconic image, stuff they play before the games and the video package, it's Ventura.
Okay.
This
so what are you picking? I'm so confused. Have you decided on anything? Look,
man.
Me and Sal, you could disagree with us, but Sal and I came, we have an answer. All right?
I get it. And you put all the pressure on me to break the tie, whether
I did
you
that on
or not. Of course.
That's right.
I'm going to go with the Grand Slam single. Despite what I just said, I'm going to go with that. I can't bring myself to not put that there.
Okay.
I'm,
fine.
Yeah,
I'd love to see I'd love to see what the Met fans think of voting on that.
That's a good one. Oh, yeah. We have to take it from more of the fans.
I'll put that up on Twitter. I wasn't going to put every matchup up, but at least I'll put that one up and see what
people say. I'm sure I'm in the minority saying that the Grand Slam single is one of the more overrated moments in the history of the franchise, but I do know that the Met fans love the Todd Pratt home run. So that's an interesting matchup, and it's even more interesting. I know we're going to get to the 2-7 matchup here, but when you look at the rest of that bracket, I mean, I think, to me, I would have had the Pratt home run beating both the 2 and the 7 games. Anyway.
Stop getting ahead of yourself.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a minute.
See, calm down. I'll put that Twitter poll up there, and I'll give you results. Early returns in the next few minutes. But real quick, let me just finish this side of the bracket with you. The final game of the 99 regular season, which I think is a very underrated game in Met history.
Yeah.
They needed to win this game to assure themselves of something. We just didn't know what. Either a one-game playoff or straight to the playoffs. They beat the Pittsburgh Pirates on a wild pitch. Piazza's up. And when Klontz threw the wild pitch, Piazza looked disgusted. He looked so upset. Because I think he wanted the moment. Versus, and it's the anniversary today, the Johan Santana no-hitter. Sal? Kick it off.
I remember I was not at the no-hitter. I gave tickets away because I was working that night. And I always, my whole life, I wanted to be there. Obviously, like every other Met fan, you want to be there if it ever happens
yep.
at home. Wasn't able to do that. But I still would put that, I think, over the 99 final game because I kind of was with Piazza. I never felt like the game was really in doubt. It was something they had to do. You can't lose to the Pirates and lose a chance of playing in a play-in game here. But then when Piazza's up in that big spot, you're thinking, Piazza's going deep. You want to see a moment. And then the stupid wild pitch. Klontz couldn't even throw it over the plate. Piazza was dejected. It was more like, okay, we won, relief, then joy or great moment. Maybe it would have been different had Piazza had the chance to swing the bat there. I would go no hitter here because of historic perspective. First time ever, whether it's legit or not, a no hitter is a no hitter.
It's legit. It has to be said, Evan. You have to say that, though. You want to pretend like it's not the thing.
It wouldn't be a no hitter today. It wouldn't be a no hitter today with replay.
Guys, it is
a no hitter, but you cannot ignore it and not say
it. Well, first of all, there's a difference between ignoring it, which I never do. I mention it. But then, do we say that about the Kansas City Royals in 85? Do we say that about every championship that's ever been won with the help of...
No, we do. A lot of things have those asterisks. Yes, you do.
There's no asterisk next to the Kansas City Royals.
Okay.
No, there is. And there's certainly not one against the Yankees because they won game one against the Orioles.
There absolutely is. What do you mean? People bring that up all the time. You don't think people bring that up and go, well, come on, Ev.
Luke, there's a difference between acknowledging a bad call, which... I've acknowledged, we've all acknowledged, and saying, if you want to call it a no-hitter, or they shouldn't have won a World Series. That's not fair.
Here's what I would say rationally or irrationally, and I'm a fan, so it's irrationally, but for 51, could we have just had a no-hitter without that? Did it have to be there? Does that have to exist? Whatever. That being said, all these years later, whatever. Honestly. I'm serious. I don't look back and go, oh, well, we pitched. We got off the schneid. We needed to get off the schneid.
Right, so
but I don't think
picking?
Fondly back at it. Like, oh, that's just me.
What are you picking?
It's a no-hitter, but I don't think it stands the test of time as this great thing for me.
Boy. We're going to have some fights later on the show because I'm picking the Johan Santana no-hitter in this matchup, and I'm sure there'll be more debates further. I'll give you the results real quick when we get back on the Ventura Grand Slam single versus the Brad home run. We'll come back. We'll get to some more matchups. John Morosi is going to join me coming up at 4 o'clock. We'll get an update on the baseball labor situation. Beningo and Roberts, Joe is off. We're here till 6.
It's so funny. I'm laughing at myself thinking when I thought about us doing this today, I figured, we'll get through the entire bracket in an hour. We're at 3:53. We've gotten through like 4 matchups. So it'll take a little bit of time. We'll get through the other parts of the first round and the greatest Met win of the last 25 years coming up. Morosi will join me at 4, so we'll get the latest on MLB's labor dispute, and then we'll finish it up right after that in the 4 o'clock hours. Let's do this rather quickly. DeGrom shows guts, and the Mets win a winner-take-all Game 5, 2015 NLDS on the road against Johan on 3 days rest, second-to-last regular season game of the year against the Marlins at Shea Stadium, and he does it not just on short rest but with a torn meniscus. Lugie, I'll let you start.
Yeah, for me, it's going to be Game 5 of the NLDS. Like every Met fan, I was super nervous when Jake gave up those runs in the first inning. They were able to rally back. And in a lot of ways, you got to give credit to Daniel Murphy. I mean, we're not winning that game without Jake or him. And how about Familia with a
2-out?
I mean, bottle that one up because you weren't going to see that ever again. So for me, the Santana performance, During that collapse, the only two guys that seemed to show up day in, day out, now Santana, not day in, day out, but every start was Santana and Beltran. That's why I think Beltran gets way too much flack here. Santana, much like Maine did the year before, when he needed to get it done, he got it done. We all know what happened the next day. But for me, that game, that in L.A., beating the Dodgers, that one to me is better than the Santana on 3 days rest.
Sal?
Yeah, I think this is an easy one. I think you could argue that you should have left the 2008 Johan game off the bracket here. I remember, because it's 2008. I mean, we'll get into it tomorrow, I'm sure, with the worst losses. But Johan was great. He was an ace. I remember, a true ace-like performance when they needed it. But come on. I mean, you're comparing it to Game 5 in a division series on the road, DeGrom, an absolute bulldog, a postseason win in a year where they ended up getting the World Series. I don't think this is close. That, you talk about stress level, that entire game, Game 5, one of the great games I could remember enjoying as a fan, even though it wasn't in my prime fandom because it was so recent, but I love that DeGrom game. That, to me, is going to be tough to beat.
Yeah.
What do you mean? Probably 99-2000.
I get it. I can hear Joe yelling from the golf course. Prime fandom, bro.
What does that even mean, bro?
The Johan game could have been historic if they won the next day. That would have been a historic game in Met history if they won the next day.
Oh, the last weekend at Shea.
But they didn't. Yeah. But it's clearly Game 5. This is a tricky one. The one-game playoff against the Reds in 1999 against the clincher, Bobby Jones, one-hitter against the Giants in Game 4 of the 2000 NLDS. Sal?
I'll probably go... obviously, I wasn't at the 99 game, being it was in Cincinnati, but I think that game was a better win. Lighter, dominating. You know, it was technically the first playoff game. I know it was the play-in game, but after that last regular season win that we talked about with Melvin Moore scoring the winning run, they get to that playoff game. They have an impressive performance. Bobby Jones' one-hitter was tremendous. I was there, but it still was kind of a nondescript, kind of an easy win. Looking back, you say, yeah, one-hitter. Had he taken the one-hitter or no-hitter into the eighth or ninth inning, maybe a little different, but the fact that he gave it up, I think, in the fifth inning, you look back.
You know who got the hit, right, Sal? You remember who got the hit?
Yeah, I looked it up today. Jeff Kent double, right?
Jeff Kent, of all people.
Yeah, Jeff Kent. Yep. Yeah, but I would vote the 99 one-game playoff.
Yeah, no, I'm complete agreement with you. Because that was the first, again, of this era, your real playoff-like game, even though it's considered a regular season game. And that game wasn't stressful either. Because
it was a total rocking chair game. Pokey Reese was like the first guy to get the second base. It was like in the ninth inning.
Well, and they also jumped on Steve Parris early in the game. And Al dominated, like you said.
And you wonder with the Giant game, after two emotional losses, they were cooked. I mean, and to me, I agree with you guys, it's game one playoff, because if you lose that game, you're not advancing. We could have still beat Levon in game five, who knows. But, I mean, it looked like the Giants just came out there in game four, and they had nothing left after the Agbayani game, the Franco game. And I think that's what led to an unlikely performance from Jones.
The post 9/11 home run game against the Braves, which is going to be an interesting one throughout this, against the first ever, and I actually rewatched this game not too long ago. It's finally on YouTube. The first ever Subway Series game. Dave Malicki against the Yankees. And let me tell you, and I mentioned this a few days ago, the crowd was electric for that game at Yankee Stadium. Even before the first pitch, Met fans and Yankee fans were at their finest. That's why the Subway Series will never be the same, because you're never going to bottle up what you got before that first game. Lug, start it off.
Yeah, I think the Subway Series, I get why they do it from a business standpoint, but it should be like every other year. This is a really tough one, but it's got to be the Piazza home run post 9/11, because for what it meant for baseball, what it meant for this city, what it meant for the fan base, the people in the building, that first Subway Series game was great, and it was the best moment in Subway Series history for the Mets. Obviously, now they're like 20 games back, but to me, that Piazza home run is such an iconic moment, not only for the fans, but for the city, for the country. It's Piazza for me.
I was fortunate to be at both these games. I am going to separate the Piazza home run and the 9/11 home run there. I separate that in its own category. That means more than sports. From a sports fan, it was eerie. Obviously, it was depressing. We didn't know what was going on then, especially as a young kid, whatever I was, 17, 18. I remember the first Subway Series game. It was my first time in a Yankee Stadium. I remember walking through the hallways and seeing the beautiful, historic Yankee Stadium, and to have the Mets, who never beat the Yankees basically afterward, to have them go out there and have Dave Malicki, a guy we would never even remember or nobody ever heard of until that, Dave Malicki go out there and complete game shutout against the mighty Yankees coming off their World Series win in 96. That, to me, as a fan, was one of the great regular season wins and one of the great Mets wins in the last 25 years. So I'm putting the Piazza home run, all due respect, in a separate category, and I would vote for the first Subway Series game.
So I'm going to do the same thing. I'm going to put, not the vote, but I'm going to do the same thing as far as separating it. But if you recall, the Mets were getting hot in 2001, and they made a great bid at an incredible comeback in the regular season. We all remember what the Yankees did in the World Series with the incredible comebacks in the ninth inning with two outs in Game 4 and Game 5. The Mets had a late run in 2001, and there were some awful losses mixed in, which we'll get to. I thought that that game not only was incredible for this city and for this country, but it also gave me as a fan the belief of they're going to come back. Like, they're going to make the playoffs. And so that's why I put it ahead of the 97 Subway Series. It's still June of 97. I don't know how good the Mets are. It's cool they beat the Yankees. It was great. I got to go to school and brag. Yeah, for what reason? Who knows? So I'm going to give 01 Piazza post 9/11 home run the edge. Final matchup, and then we'll get to Morosi on the baseball stuff. Winning the pennant in 2015 NLCS Game 4, completing the sweep in Chicago against another Subway Series moment. Shows you how much we cared about the Subway Series back in the day. Matt Franco's game-winning hit against Mariano Rivera, all-time great game on a Saturday afternoon. It was back and forth. Subway Series, Franco game-winning hit, Mets win the pennant in 2015. Sal.
I hate to be biased, again, toward, I hate it, the prime fandom here, and look, the 2015 Game 4 was great, but it was also more of a celebration. Mets buzzed through the red-hot Cubs in that entire series. That game wasn't a close game. It was a great win, great celebration, but I think the more intense game, one of the great regular season games that I've ever seen, certainly that I've been at, and the Mets finally take 2 of 3 from the Yankees, I would also vote, in this case, with the Subway Series game, the Matt Franco.
Interesting.
You know what? I'm going to go
off for Rivera to boot.
Well, and again, remember, in Game 4, once we beat Lester and Arrieta, that series was over. So whether it was 4, 5, 6, now listen, you don't want to sweat that out. But that great moment against Rivera is certainly in the top three games in Subway Series history. You know what? We're picking all the favorites. Let's let the 7 seed get through here because the Cubs were just not ready. Next year was their year. I have a bigger rant on that later. But let's go with the 7 seed here, the Franco game-winning hit off Rivera.
Wow. So I don't even have to vote.
Your vote's
over. No, I know. I was going...
Well, what would you vote, though?
I would have voted 2015 NLCS, but I will admit this to you guys. It was very, very close for a lot of the reasons you gave. That what differentiated a regular season win to winning the pennant, what made it closer was the fact that I was confident they were going to win the series. Even up 3-0, you never know, the Cubs, they could pull what the Red Sox pulled. I was very confident.
They weren't ready to pull what the Red Sox pulled at that point.
And I was confident the Mets were going to win that series. And in that moment as a teenager, you know, where you got to go to school every day, right, and basically be outnumbered by Yankee fans, 10-1 basically.
At least.
That was a tremendous, tremendous victory, though it still bothers me they couldn't pleat the sweep the next day against Hideki Arabu on my birthday. Just pointing that out.
First time they won 2 of 3, the back and forth of that game, the huge moments. It's
amazing,
just an incredible
game. Piazza hit this majestic bomb off from Miro Mendoza. Jorge Posada hit a big home run in this game. And Matt Franco struck out on the 0-2 pitch, by the way. You know, since we talk about bad calls and whatnot, the 0-2 pitch by Mariano was strike 3. So really, the Yankees won the game. Yankees actually won the game, according to Loogie and Sal. Sal, I'll talk to you in a little bit. I appreciate you doing this with me today.
Thank you. Yep.
Thank you, man. We'll take a little bit of a break from this. We'll talk to John Morosi, an update on the baseball labor situation, and we'll figure it out. The greatest Met win in the last 25 years. The Yankees on Wednesday and Thursday. The Mets today. Beningo and Roberts here in the afternoon.
Afternoon show. Joe Beningo is on vacation. Evan Roberts here till 6 o'clock. Sal Acott is back with me as we finish off the final 8 of the greatest Met victories of the last 25 years. And Sal, I don't want to make you feel bad, but we put that on Twitter about 45 minutes ago. Discussion. Oh, you already know? You already know the results?
I saw you. I mean, I don't know what it is up to the minute, but when I last checked, it was my pick of the Pratt game was losing by a nice majority.
Yes, I put it up there for Met fans, and I guess for non-Met fans, too. The Todd Pratt series-winning home run against Arizona in 99 versus the Ventura Grand Slam single. Obviously, the Mets lost the following game and lost the series, and it's 64% to 36%. with about 1,000 people chiming in the last 45 minutes that says the Ventura Grand Slam single.
Yeah, and those 60% are wrong, and that is why I say that it's the most overrated moment in Mets history, because the fans love it. Oh, the Grand Slam single. The series was over. They were down 3-0. Okay, at that moment, they had won a game. They're down 3-1 against a team they never beat. So did you really think they're going to win the series? And I loved Game 6, one of my favorite games, even though obviously it ended in awful fashion, but that was a great baseball game, so I know that it gave another moment. But in reality, you won a game. You in a series, you were down 3-0, 3-1. What's the big deal?
You don't know that in the moment. I mean, that's like a Red Sox
fan. They were down 0-3 to the Braves.
Okay, the Red Sox were down 0-3 to the Yankees. Did they think they were coming back? Did everybody in EEI up in Boston say, oh, well, you know what? Yeah, we got them right where we want them. Give me a break. So when they won Game 5, that was a big deal.
Come on, that Red Sox team was better than the 99 Mets team. Again, especially when you compare it.
Sound.
Yeah, Red Sox, Yankees, and then a Mets.
Hold on. Yeah, exactly. Red Sox, Yankees. Repeat that in your brain in 2004 before the collapse, before the comeback, and tell yourself what you're actually saying. No one thought they were coming back.
I understand.
Back.
Especially with Mariano on the mound. This is before the bloody sock in Game 7.
Of course not. Nobody thought that they were coming back. At down 0-3, you never think you're coming back. But my point is, I think that Red Sox team was more disappointing and shocked to be down 0-3. The Mets would be down 0-3 to the Braves in 99. Even though they were close games, the Mets weren't on par with them as far as that team.
And the more I think about it, they were up about 18 times in Game 6, too. They blew about four different leads at different times. So they had a shot. They who knows? Game 7, you never know. Probably would have led to an even bigger disaster down in Turner Field. But
it probably so. They force a Game 7 and lose it. All right, before we get to the next round, let's hear from a couple of people. Let me start with Ryan in Bronxville. Ryan, how are you?
Hey, Evan, man. Ciao, everyone. Great job. Listen, I wanted to mention with the Pirates, 99, Oral Hershiser around Sunday afternoon, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay, so the thing is about that series was we needed to sweep the Pirates.
Yes.
It was a Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yes.
And I remember I went to all three games. If Friday, you get tickets for $5, man. Saturday, maybe $15. Sunday, you needed to call your friend to get tickets.
Sounds about right. Friday night, the faith of Met fans. Yeah, $5, you can sit in great seats. Saturday, I'll feel a little bit better. By Sunday, you know, you can't get in. And Friday, they won on a Robin Ventura game winner. I forget what inning. Maybe extra innings. I don't remember. Game winner, his fist is up in the air. And then Saturday, Rick Reed pitched a brilliant, brilliant game. One more, and then we'll get back to this. Brendan in West Virginia. Brendan, go ahead.
How we doing, fellas? Listening to you guys on radio.com. I'm not sure if you had brought this game up already because I'm using the rewind function.
Sure.
It's like pulling teeth. It's like trying to tinfoil this. App always goes, crashes. It was 2000, I believe. My buddy took me to see the Mets Braves firework night, and the Mets are down by like 9.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Out of here. Yeah. He's like, listen, you know, I paid money for these tickets. I'm like, all right, fireworks. Next thing you know, it's 9-5, 9-6, 9-7. Piazza comes up and hits that laser beam down the old right field line. And I swear the place was rocking, shaking, literally shaking. With
Brent.
Don't forget Alfonso, though. Don't forget Alfonso.
Listen, just because I give the underrated guy credit doesn't mean that you should mock it, Sal. It was a big part of that game was tying the game up, obviously.
Fonzie was clutch. You know what I was thinking, Ev, looking back over some of the box scores here just to refresh my memory? Those teams were not only incredibly clutch, and not only did they get off to good starts, but late in a game when they needed a run, they could get it. A walk, a stolen base, a base hit, a stolen base. They would be able to sacrifice bunt, a base hit. They had clutch guys, but they also were able. You know, stolen base was big then. And you could reference Alfonso. You could reference Darrell Hamilton. They had a bunch of clutch players on that team that enabled them to come back in the 8th or 9th inning or extra innings when they were down. So it was, you're right. It's not all about Piazza. It's not even all about Alfonso. Those 99 and 2000 teams, different players, but clutch performers on those teams.
I kind of feel bad saying this because the guy's done nothing wrong, and I'm not sure he's listening right now. He's probably hitting a golf ball. I'm not talking about Joe. I don't know why I keep hearing Jastrzemski's voice in my head mocking every great Met game we talk about with this. Oh, really? That's what you think is so great? I don't know why. I can't get
because it always because it always goes back to that. Because especially for Met fans that are under 40, it always, always goes back to that because we did not live in a world where the Mets were above the Yankees. Like you said, 10-1. So everything we think about, whether it was the Harvey no way game, the Santana no hitter with the ball with the Beltran play, we always go back to these things where that we give fuel for the Yankee fans.
I know.
That's just the life that we live.
It feels smaller. It feels smaller. All right, let's get to the second round of this thing. All right, first of all, the Mets winning the pennant in 2000, the party atmosphere against the Cardinals. Franco strikes out Barry Bonds to finish game two of the NLDS. Two very different kind of games, even though they're only separated by a couple of weeks. Lugie, I'll let you start it off.
Yeah, it's tough for me to pick the Franco game here. Again, it was a pivotal game, and listen, there is no NLCS if they don't win the Franco game. But when you still have a game that gets you into the World Series for the first time that I can remember, it's going to be hard for me to pick against that game. So I'm going to go with the pennant clincher here over the Franco Bond strikeout.
Now, I'm going to make things interesting for you, Sal, because I am actually going to go with the Franco game. And my thinking behind it was, I said earlier, radio.com rewind button, I close my eyes and imagine what my stomach felt like. And for that game five to win the pennant, it was all about the excitement leading up to the moment. Because you knew early on they were going to win that game. And they were winning the pennant. They had a big lead. Hampton was locked in. They were not losing that game. But the anxiety of watching Armando Benitez, who at that moment in Met history had blown games, but was not the guy we later knew him to be. You know, Yankee fans would warn us about Armando because they had their history with the Orioles. And remember, Benitez was on the mound when Jeter hit that Jeffrey Mayer home run, if we're going full circle here. But for us as Met fans, we didn't trust him, but he wasn't the guy he turned into yet. This game was bad. Giving up the home run to Snow, and then obviously taking the lead, and Franco battling. So even though the moment of winning the pennant is this, you know, pinnacle moment for any young Met fan, I'm actually going to say Franco striking out Bonds and the Mets winning game two of the 2000 NLDS. I'm going to make it even.
I think it comes down to a couple of things. Are you valuing the better game, the more intense game, a tough, hard-fought, unlikely road victory after blowing the lead, or the celebration that was game five of the 2000 NLCS? I would always lean, even though you talk about special celebration and the place was something that I never experienced at that point, knowing that they're going to the World Series, the in-game, from start to finish of the game, the game two of the NLDS was so much more intense. The back and forth, the clutch performance, blowing it, coming back, that to me it was the overall better game, even though it was on the road and I'm watching it from afar, I still would probably lean with the 2000 NLDS game two, because the clincher was such a blowout and more of a party, I'm going with the intense game.
All right. I won you over. Or maybe I didn't win you over, and you're going to say that anyway.
Well, I would have had that out in the first round. Remember, I would have had the 2000 Piazza.
That's right. That's right. You took the 10-run inning first. That's true. That's
true. So hard to then pick that over a playoff win if I'm having a regular season game.
I forgot about that part. I have to hit radio.com and rewind remember what you said.
I was going to say.
Then I'll remember that. All right. This is interesting because I think the Johan no-hitter is such a weird thing in a tournament like this. Johan no-hitter, grand slam single. Sal?
I hate both these. I shouldn't say I hate both these games. I think they're both overrated. One is a great individual accomplishment with a little bit of a help from the umpire.
Right.
And one is, to me, I'm going Johan. And not only because the anniversary, because it's something that as a fan I wanted to see my entire life. Even though I couldn't be at the game, I still saw it. Even though there was some questionable, you know, the questionable call with the Beltran, doesn't matter. It happened. Johan deserved it because he was a true ace for them. Maybe not that year, but obviously dating back to when he first got there. I just think the Grand Slam single is overrated, so I'm going with the Johan. No.
Okay. Lugie?
Well, it doesn't matter what I think because you're going to pick Johan. And Evan, I get it. You're at the game. You've scored every single game your entire life. So for you being there, you got to probably hang the scorecard above your bed at home. I'm sure your wife loves that.
Maybe.
So this is one of the great... I mean, I'm sure you're at the Grand Slam single game as well. But just a guy like you that likes to keep score, the no-hitter, it meant something
to you. This isn't about me. What about you?
Well, I'm saying you're going to pick Johan. Well, I'm picking Grand Slam single.
Okay.
But I'm just saying, I'm not going to give you the full diatribe here because I know where you're going with this. I know where the tie is going to be broken.
Well, I'm going to surprise you, by saying that, I am going to take the Johan no-hitter. Look, I think that there's these holy grails in sports that you hear about and you're told this is never going to happen over and over again.
The Knicks winning a title?
Yeah, there's a lot of things. The Knicks winning a title, the Jets getting to a Super Bowl, a team coming back from 3-0 down, the Cubs winning a World Series. You're told all of these things over and over again. And some of those things I just mentioned have obviously happened. Not the Jets going to a Super Bowl, spoiler alert, since Super Bowl III, but the Cubs winning a World Series, 3-0 down, all that. Not them being 3-0 down, but you know what I mean. This was one of those things. This was one of those things you were always taught was never going to happen. And it happened when you least
expected. But does it matter now? All these, we're here on the anniversary, so it's the first time. Okay.
Yeah. No, it does.
In your scorecard, Evan, your scorecard, is there an asterisk next to the Beltron out?
There's a mustard stain. All that would imply he buys food at the
I am never going to forget a buddy of mine.
How do you score a double?
You jerk. A friend of mine went to the game with me. It's unfortunate my dad wasn't there that night, and that stinks, but he didn't go to the game that night. So that's the tough luck. You never know when it's going to happen.
And by friend, this is somebody that randomly you met the first day that, like, went to the game because he won a contest on Twitter or something.
Longtime friend of mine, Nick, is from New Orleans, became a Met fan after he moved here to work in satellite radio. Good friend of mine, and he did something very valuable. And it's pathetic, but it's valuable. In the ninth inning, he sensed, Evan, I've known him for about 7 or 8 years now. He's really into this. Took his camera phone out and filmed the last at bat and then flashed to me celebrating. Now, it's just for my own record, my own memory, I can actually have how much of a fool I acted when the no-hitter happened. You know, I got the stupid pen in my ear, from scoring the game. You know, so I appreciate that. I'm able to savor that moment forever. Imagine, Sal, if someone videotaped you as Piazza was hitting the home run in the 10-run inning. You'd love that.
Yeah.
Get to look back at yourself.
I can look back and remember the chaos that ensued in my mind's eye, but no, I wish I had that on video.
So Nick, who's not listening, thank you, sir. But of course it's the Johan no-hitter. Come on now. It's a once-in-a-lifetime thing, and I don't know if it'll ever happen again. All right, real quick, let me get through this round with you guys. The 2015 NLDS Game 5 against the one-game playoff against the Cincinnati Reds. Sal, I'll start with you. Sorry, I didn't direct anybody.
I'll probably go... I'll probably lean 2015 on this one, again, because of the intensity. I know how important it was in 99, and now we're getting down to, some difficult decisions here. The 99 game was great, even though that was more my prime fandom. The 2015 Game 5, that was so intense, such a great performance on the road against the big bad L.A. Dodgers. I would still go with that game in Game 5 of the NLDS in 2015.
It is.
Yeah, it is, right? For sure.
I don't mean to take the... Oh, it's a clean sweep. This is a powerhouse as a one seed. A Game 5 on the road, as close as it was. That one-game playoff, look, it's a winner-take-all game as well. I mean, let's not forget what was on the line, and it would have been a massive disappointment if they ever lost that game. But I think the fact that the game wasn't close makes it a little bit easier. If that's a close game, if the Mets win that game, 10-9, a game-winning run, top of the 11th inning, we may talk about it differently. The fact that it was easy, Al Leiter dominated, I think it's much, it's just easier to kind of...
Plus the opponent. How about the opponent as well? The Reds, there's really no animosity. The Dodgers?
They're just there.
Well, beating Turner in that series, too, was a little extra added because he hit about 500 in the series.
Yeah, did they actually beat Justin Turner? Because all Turner did was get hits.
They beat the team he was on.
The Subway Series Matt Franco game-winning hit and the Mike Piazza post 9/11 home run against the Braves. Lugie, I'll let you start it.
Again, I got to go Piazza here because for what the win meant, and we talked about greatest wins, what that win meant for this city, for the Met fans, it's going to be very tough to beat in this bracket. And again, that was some of the apprehension about putting it in there, was that how could you judge it fairly against other games here? But there's just no way I'm going to put it. It's not like it was the only walk-off the Mets have ever had against the Yankees. I talked about David Wright earlier. So for me, it's the Piazza home run after 9/11.
At the time, however, it was the first time that the Mets had clinched at least 2 of 3 from the Yankees in the series. The back-and-forth game, the great drama of that afternoon game on that Saturday, the regular season intensity between the two fan bases, big moments for each side throughout, and then finally, Matt Franco, of all people, beating Mariano Rivera. I said it in the first bracket, you could put it in there, I'm putting it separate. In my mind, the Piazza 9/11 game, that is always going to be separate. So from a fan's perspective, I would still go with the 98 Subway Series Matt Franco game.
Well, I'll take the heat for this. I'm going to go with the Subway Series Matt Franco game winning hit. And here's why. Because from an important standpoint for what it did for the city, of course it's going to be the Piazza 9/11 home run. There's no doubt. I remember it. My memory of the game is surreal in a different way. I wasn't there, but I was on a train because I lived in Washington, D.C. at the time, and I needed to get back to New York City. It was my first time up since the attack. And I just wanted to see my family and see the city and see the Mets again and just everything. And so I listened to the game on a transistor radio or the wall. Actually, it was a Walkman, not even a train. I don't know what the difference is, but it was a Walkman on the Amtrak coming up listening to the game. And it was emotional. I mean, there's no doubt. I mean, everything about it, from the national anthem to just not even being there, but hearing it, you could sense what was going on in that building. But what I tried to do with this, Sal, is what you did, and that's close my eyes and think about the winning and think about, okay, how did it make you feel, not just from a I'm an American, I'm a New Yorker standpoint, but everything. And in that moment in 1999, it's weird to say now because I think the Subway Series has lost all its luster, but it did feel like winning a World Series. And that's pathetic. I'll be the first to tell you. Yankee fans don't have to tell me that. I know it's pathetic. It felt like winning a World Series.
Listen, honestly, it's one of the greatest regular season baseball games of all time. I mean, when you factor in the emotion that came with that game and Piazza basically hit into Corona Avenue, it wasn't a cheap home run. I mean, it was just what a moment. I mean, especially in times like this when you think about sports and the healing and all that. I mean, it was just – it gives you goosebumps and chills just thinking about it, that whole situation.
And it was before – to Evan's point, it was before the playoffs in 99, before the playoffs and then the eventual World Series in 2000.
Correct.
So that was one of the great moments to date if you're a young fan.
Yes. And there's no doubt, like, we're going to have things that, as every fan, it's the same thing with Joe with the bracket of pain. He mentioned a lot, this was going on in my life when this happened. This was happening. As fans, all of us listening, there's something that jumps out at you for you personally. And I think for me, and probably for you, Sal, based on the way you were talking, it was where we were in life. You know, we're young. We're teenagers. We're grown right to believe the Mets never succeeded anything and the Yankees win the World Series every year. That's where we are in this moment of July of 1999. So I look back on it and I laugh and I know it's pathetic, and that's totally fine. I think anybody could say it's pathetic looking back on it, but in the moment in 1999, that felt like winning a World Series. I wanted to watch the replay of that final play over and over again, and just for you guys to really put in your pipe and smoke it, especially you, Sal, but they really lost because the 0-2 pitch was a strike to Matt Franco. So it's an asterisk game.
That's
right,
a little
Sal? That's different. Balls
Come
and strikes
on,
are different, Ev, and you know that. That's such a stretch. Balls and strikes are different. That it's not like what happened with Beltran and Santana. It's apples and oranges.
Get you all flustered. We'll come back and get through the final four. We'll get to your calls in the 5 o'clock hour, talk about other things as well. But Ingo and Roberts here in the afternoon. Thank you to Sal and Lugie for sitting in. We're here till 6. Four baseball games from the last 25 years. Two of them are regular season games.
Oh, pathetic. It's pathetic. I was just thinking of that.
And those are the greatest Met games, quote unquote, at least according to us, of the last 25 years. Sal Licata is with me, does a great job here on this radio station, big Met fan. Tommy Lugauer has done a fine job producing. Comes down to these four. Let's figure it out. Game 2, 2000 NLDS, really remembered for John Franco striking out Barry Bonds versus the Johan Santana no-hitter. And before you guys say a word, I'm going to go first, okay? Because I want to state my case. And that is a no-hitter by a New York Met pitcher. That is a statement never thought you'd hear. Sal never thought he'd hear it. Lugie never thought he'd hear it. Many people listening never thought they would hear it. A no-hitter by a New York Met pitcher. And whether there was a bad call or there was a bunch of walks or whatever you want to say about it, yes, it wasn't perfect. He didn't pitch a perfect game. He threw a no-hitter. It goes down in history as a no-hitter. And it happened. Think about all the times Howie Rose would come on and say, it's now the 8,000th game without a no-hitter, or whatever the number was. I don't even know where it ended. That happened. So I'm going to vote for the Johan no-hitter. Sal, take it away.
I probably have to go Johan no-hitter as well. I hate the lack of powerful postseason wins, you know, not only throughout the course of the bracket, but especially here. And I hate to leave one of those wins out, but I do think that, you know, we're just talking about game two of a series where there were a few good wins with the Mets from that series. So I'm going to have to go Johan. I think it was a more special victory than just game two of the 2000 NLDS.
Do you want to make it a clean sweep, Luger, or no?
I do not. I'm going to go Franco here. Yeah, why not? I mean, like I said, it was a game that propelled us to get to the World Series, and I'm going to go over that over a no-hitter. Just because the Mets have only pitched one no-hitter, that's not my problem. Most teams have a 50
that
besides like the Mariners.
That's irrelevant.
No, it's not irrelevant.
Of course it is.
But you're asking my opinion, so I'm giving you two. That's right. So I don't think it's irrelevant. I'm just giving you what I give. All these years later, on the day of, I don't think fondly back to it. I'm sorry. Wow. If that makes me a bad fan or a bad person, that's just... That's how I feel.
No, it doesn't make you a bad... I mean,
it was cool at the time, although I remember being like, oh, I think I got to work with like Summers tomorrow, so I was probably dreading that. But
what?
I mean...
Come on.
I'm teasing. Steve knows I love him. But yeah.
All I know is that Joe Beningo called me up on a Saturday for the Saturday show to chime in.
Bro, what am I hearing here? They pitched a no-hitter last night? What am I hearing here, bro? Did this actually happen? Did this really happen?
He admitted he got emotional watching it. You got emotional one. It's a very, very big deal. I'm surprised.
Well, especially from someone like Joe, who saw all those years and all those close calls. For me, again, like I said, at the time, yeah. But then, like, looking back on it now, what, 8 years later, it doesn't resonate with me. I'm sorry, it doesn't.
All right, the Subway Series. I can't believe it's here. The Subway Series, Matt Franco getting a game-winning get against Mariano Rivera on a Saturday afternoon in July. Against
it was a great game.
I know it was. I picked it too. I love it. It's emotional.
Who made this bracket anyway? I mean, come on here.
Some loser. That's who made it. 2015 NLDS Game 5, Sal.
The one I'm going to separate it and then give you my pick.
This is difficult.
Yeah, because the one for me as a fan that means more was the 99 Subway Series game because I was there. I was a huge fan at the point. We mentioned it. It was before the success in 99 and 2000. But I think the bigger moment, the better game, certainly the more meaningful game overall, is Game 5 of the NLDS. That was just a tremendous baseball game. On the road, a victory like that to clinch a series, hard time knocking that one off. So I would go with DeGrom dominating, or not dominating, the DeGrom game in Game 5 of the NLDS 2015.
I'm starting to get the impression you don't even like baseball anymore I'm not really a fan anymore. Like, what does that even mean?
No, I didn't say I'm not a fan anymore. I'm saying that you transition as an adult, as a broadcaster.
You?
In 1999, I hated... I could not fairly do a radio show in 1999. I would be blindly biased toward the Mets and my hatred for the Yankees. And it's not the same way anymore. I've grown up. I've learned. It's not that important to me as it was in 1999. A lot has happened in the last 20 years.
That's not the point. In 2015, the Mets are playing a Game 5 of the Division Series. It has nothing to do with any other team. They're playing Game 5 of the Divisional Series. You weren't as into that as games from the late 90s?
Probably not. I mean, I was into it in the moment. In the moment, sure. Let me ask you this. If the Mets would have won the World Series in 15, would it have meant more to me than winning it in 2000 or 99?
Yes.
The answer would be no.
Okay,
no,
my answer is yes.
To me.
Yeah, it's yes.
Yeah.
My answer is yes. My answer is as time goes by, it becomes bigger and
without
almost the unreachable star. That's what happens. You're naive when you're young. You think, oh, don't worry, I got time. I'll be back. Then I look over to my right, at least when we're in the same studio. Actually, it's to my left. And I see Joe, who hasn't seen things in decades. And I say to myself, wait, there is no guarantee that I would see it.
And the Mets have creeped up that list of droughts year. We see the Cubs, we see the Nationals win, we see the Astros win. And now the Mets are in like the top 10. So each year it grows more and more and more.
For time purposes, I'm going to agree with you. It is clearly Game 5 of the 2015 NLDS. So it has set up two moments in the last 8 years. The Johan Santana no-hitter against Game 5 of the 2015 National League Divisional Series. Loogie, I know what you're going to pick, so just go.
Yeah, it's going to be the DeGrom game, Game 5.
Okay. Sal, how are you going to go?
I will also go with that game. I think it just means that much more. I know no-hitter is great, but you're talking about winning a playoff game that essentially led to a World Series berth. I have to go with the DeGrom game in Game 5.
I'm going to tell you something, all right? And obviously, I agree. It is, for us today, in this exercise of whatever you want to call it, the greatest Met victory in the last 25 years. The more I thought about it over the last few weeks, because I've gone through a lot of different Met wins, Yankee losses, the more I thought about it, it wasn't even close. That game, on so many levels, was the greatest Met victory I have witnessed in my time on this earth. The sheer nervousness of it being a Game 5, Not being there almost added to it. Because now I'm pacing around my apartment. Jake, who's my guy. You know, I love Jake. I've loved him since the beginning. My guy. You know, managing along with Terry, saying, oh, you got to get Jake out. You got to get someone in. Familia, Syndergaard, Murphy, Utley hitting one that off the bat looked like it was going to be a home run. Let's not forget that. That on every level. And I admit it's sad. We're talking about game five of the first round of the playoffs. We're not talking about the World Series.
Yeah, but
Series
they went
here.
On to sweep the Cubs. It started off where there was some bliss. For like a week or two, there was bliss. Yeah.
Greatest Met victory of all time. To me, it's not even close. And I'm glad that you guys agreed enough for them to win. Because I think it is. I think that victory on a lot of levels is greatest. It has the mix of game magnitude and what happened after, like Loogie mentioned, the fact they end up sweeping the Cubs.
Agreed.
So we feel like we accomplished something today, don't we?
I'm kind of more depressed about it than anything else.
Oh, absolutely. I said you can't tell whether the wins or losses, what's more depressing, looking at the brackets, honestly.
No matter what one, you'd walk away depressing. Really? That's number one?
The deeper we got, the worse it became. The more depressed I was.
On Wednesday.
This is the final four of the last 25 years?
On Wednesday, JJ and Ernie are going to be fighting. Well, this win championship was better. No, this championship was better. No, this championship did this. It's
like we talked about. They lost in the 2001 World Series. That was their worst loss. They've won a World Series since.
Wow, but that doesn't.
What do you mean it doesn't matter? We're talking about losses and we've never won.
No, they've won since. I understand, but it's still going to be a bad loss.
I'm not saying that, but my point is, we talked about it at the start of the segment. The differences here are so stark, it's not even funny.
Sal, I appreciate you taking a lot of time out of your day and getting no money for it. So thank you, Sal. I appreciate that.
Thank you, Sal. Thank you guys for having me. Appreciate it.
You're the man. Sal Licata, you can hear him on the radio station a lot. So we have declared with one loud voice, your winner and champion of this Game 5, 2015. It was that good. We'll do greatest Yankee victory on Wednesday, and there will be some sadness from a sports perspective with all the losses that have occurred. But I appreciate Sal, and I appreciate you, Tommy Lugar.